Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. This is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host from the American Enterprise Institute, Dr. Rick Hess. Rick,
hey.
Welcome.
Hey, good to see you.
How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
It was nice to see you this past weekend at the AERA conference.
That's the American Education Research Association. We were out in San Francisco.
Very nice.
And boy, did I learn a lot about cultural hegemony.
Cultural hegemony.
That's indeed.
Wow. Okay. I'm not even sure what that means.
I don't think they were either.
Well, good, good, good. Well, for those of you listening for the first time, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show, inspired by our online version, the Education Gadfly. You can read that at www.edexcellence.net. We're going to start today with an interview, and we're very glad to have with us Nina Chakrai-Reese. Nina, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, Nina was in the Bush administration. In fact, she was my boss when I worked at the Department of Education, and she was the Assistant Deputy Secretary for Innovation and Improvement. Now, last week, Rick called me a minor appointee in the Department of Education.
I think functionary was a term of art.
Functionary. Would you give that? Can you consider Nina now a senior official?
Nina is a mid-major, kind of like George Mason.
Oh, come on.
Ouch. Okay, well, we're off to a good start here. Well, Nina, one of the jobs that she had was to oversee the supplemental services provisions of No Child Left Behind, and she wrote an editorial for the Education Gadfly this week, which does not talk about George Mason, but in fact talks about how the school choice groups of America are not paying enough attention to this provision that gives free tutoring to low-income kids if they're stuck in schools that are failing. So, Nina, from reading your editorial, it looks like you are mad. So what are you mad about?
Well, as you mentioned, I think it's frustrating that the traditional school choice movement has not really paid attention to this provision. They can be far more active in educating parents and also serving as a watchdog to a lot of the providers in the community.
Right. So why have they been missing in action? What's going on?
Well, partly because they were frustrated at the fact that the president compromised his private school choice provision too quickly. But in reality, as I was mentioning to you earlier, if you were to actually design a voucher program at the federal level, the way that the president had envisioned it, that would have required federal Title I funds to follow kids to a school of their choice and required that the school districts offer their own match in order for the amount to go up. You know, in reality, we would have created a pretty complicated system at the federal level, which would have been very difficult to implement. In a way, supplemental services is far easier to implement, a much cleaner way at getting choice to parents.
So you're saying that some of these choice advocates, they're just a bunch of babies? They're just whining, whine, 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 complain, complain, complain? Is that what you're saying, Nina?
I wouldn't go that far, but I do think that they're not very good at learning from one another and also seizing the opportunity to take advantage of innovations like supplemental services. I think some of them are slowly coming around. But as I mentioned in my article for you, Mike, one of the lessons that I think the charter school movement could really teach the traditional supplemental service movement is just lessons in accreditation, lessons in effective ways of working with school districts to get the job done.
So what's an example of the kind of problem you're talking about, Nina?
Well, one example, let me just cite one that was in the papers recently. There's one school district in a major state where 10,000 low-income parents qualify for supplemental services, and only about 100 students are benefiting from the program. I think
so
those
1%.
Numbers could be much higher, yes.
So what would be some solutions? What could folks do to make the situation better?
Okay, first and foremost, I think it's very important for the traditional school choice movement to invest far more in local community outreach and education efforts, everything from distributing pamphlets to putting together town hall meetings, educating parents about the options available to them, and more importantly also overseeing the types of providers that have hopped on the scene. There are over 700 of them right now at the national level, and I think coming up with some way to better regulate the industry before states and the federal government come in to regulate it is long overdue.
All right. Well, very good. Well, Nina, one last question for you. What do you miss most from the Department of Education? Was it the car and driver? Was it the cafeteria?
Of course, Mike. I miss working with you.
Oh, no. That's not the right answer.
And I think Rick wants to revisit the way he described me as an official at the department.
Well, you know, much
do
like
you
GMU,
apologize?
Nina, much like GMU, I see you as a mid-major on a streak.
Okay, whatever.
Mid-major on a streak. Well, we were going to close with that. Great. Thank you, Nina, for joining us today. And she is now banging her very very expensive shoes on the table. Okay.
Rumpelstiltskin.
Okay, very good.
There we go.
All right. Well, Rick, it is now time for us to play Pardon the Gadfly. This is where we debate three big topics of the week, pound each other into a fine powder, as I like to say. Are you ready for this?
I am. But before we actually get into it, I do think we ought to explore a bit the issue of Rumpelstiltskin and school reform. No, maybe not. All right. Topic number one. Maryland State Superintendent Nancy Grasmick's plan to take over 11 failing Baltimore schools was rebuffed by the state legislature. Baltimore's mayor says the city can and will reform these failing schools on its own. Mike, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I can't believe that the state actually wants these schools. I mean, who would want these failing schools, you know? I mean, what is that? I mean, it's unbelievable. But yes, the state wants to take them over, wants to contract them out to some private providers or nonprofit groups, really take charge. I mean, these are schools that have been on a failing schools list forever, right? And so now what happens? Well, a bunch of politicians get involved and say, no, give us another year, let us fix these schools. Well, where were they 10 years ago, 20 years ago? I mean, how long are we going to wait?
But you know, in light of kind of breaking news today, the arrest of this the mafia head in Italy, what strikes me is that we actually, turns out, we arrested the head of the mafia before we could figure out how to get failing schools into the hands of somebody else. That's just kind of an astonishing statement, isn't it?
It is astonishing, yes.
That's kind of impressive.
And I appreciate, by the way, that you didn't, by saying that, make any kind of ethnic slur about my Italian heritage.
Well, you know, what I do believe is that we ought to look at each other as one of God's children. Although, out at AERA, I did learn that colorblind ideology is actually a pathology.
Ah.
And that one of the things we need to do to work with teachers going into new schools, in places like Baltimore, is teach them to unlearn this tendency to see everybody as individuals and help them understand that children are defined by their race and ethnicity. I just think that's a very interesting direction that we've managed to take the whole question of teacher preparation.
Very nice, Rick. Wow. Okay. Well, teacher preparation, that has to do with our next topic. All right. A new study out by Brookings Institution, written by some people who are by all means seen as liberals, as Democrats. Robert Gordon is the lead author, who is at the Center for American Progress. He was the domestic policy advisor to the Kerry and Edwards campaign. And what they say is basically, A, we should fire teachers who are not yet tenured, new teachers who are not doing a good job in the classroom. B, we should get more people into the profession through alternate routes. And C, we should pay teachers based on how they're performing in the classroom. I mean, this is pretty radical stuff coming from the left.
It's radical stuff like this. It gets them disavowed. You know, one of the first responses to Gordon's study was from the American Federation of Teachers. On their blog, they told him he could go sit in a corner with folks like you and me. You know, you got to feel bad for the guy. I mean, what's interesting is that the unions are trying to hold the same line that we've seen, for instance, French labor holding in the last couple of weeks with the French reforms. And in France, of course, they were able to rally their erstwhile allies, particularly the young and the unemployed, and they were able to go out and undo the proposed legislation, which would have made it easier, for instance, to fire new employees under the age of 26. In the States, what we're seeing is another dynamic, which is the progressive coalition is coming apart. Thoughtful progressives like Robert Gordon and his co-authors on this, particularly Tom Kane and Doug Steger, are saying, look, this isn't doing anybody any good. It's not doing poor children any good. It's not doing the left any good. They're suggesting sensible, you know, centrist solutions to this problem. It's going to make it real hard for the unions in 2008 to keep the candidates kind of toeing the party line if they can't even keep their ideological colleagues in line.
Right. Well, they certainly didn't succeed during this whole election on the West Wing, where, of course, you know, the Democratic candidate came out strongly in favor of these reforms. All right. Well,
and he won. That, I think that's a lesson.
Do we know that yet?
Well, it's going into overtime, but I think Santos won when he won Oregon or Nevada.
Okay. Very nice. All right. So here's a question, though. I mean, what's fascinating about the study, from my perspective, is that we now know that a teacher who is horrible their first or second year in the classroom, which, by the way, I'd put myself in that category when I was a teacher, right, is most likely going to be horrible 5 years later. They'll get a little bit better, but they're never going to be as good as the teachers that look pretty good in the first couple of years. You can predict. And so if we see teachers that are flailing in their first couple of years, more so than their peers, that are clearly not getting any results in student achievement, we should just do them a favor and fire them on the spot.
I mean, you know, a lot of this is just common sense, right? In any walk of life, people can and do get better. But there's certainly, when we're talking about how we're going to invest money and who we want to keep and who we want to pursue, there's a bunch of this common sense stuff. And what we're seeing is bipartisan agreement on what it looks like.
You know, Rick, I just want to warn you that we are willing to fire you on the spot if we have to do it.
Yes, you probably should.
Because, you know, you don't have tenure yet on the show.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right. Okay, but you do have a chance to give us our third topic. What is it?
Oh, Well, I might have to have a labor slowdown in light of my lack of security here. So we'll read very slowly. Okay. Protests. All right. Montgomery County, Maryland, gives its students community service credit for attending protests, such as the recent showing of activism on the National Mall around the immigration question. Mike, what do you think of students receiving credit to carry signs on a sunny day?
Well, you know what? I sure wish that I could have gotten credit to carry signs on a sunny day when I was in high school. Let me tell you, back then, we weren't getting credit for this kind of thing.
What were you getting credit for?
Actually, I don't even remember, really, what we were getting credit. I don't think I got any credit. There was no credit.
No credit?
Well,
I do remember in Baton Rouge, actually, trying to have students have to engage in a political campaign as part of, I think it was civics. So they had to write, about it and kind of discuss.
These were your students?
These were my students at 10th grade.
And wasn't there something about washing your car was a part of the...
Well, that was a little on the side, and certainly carrying my books and buying sushi. But the fundamental challenge was that this was the year David Duke was running for governor of Louisiana. And so one of the things that you open up is when students get engaged in these controversial questions and bring them into the schoolhouse, you've got all kinds of possibilities for critical and cognitive thought. Now, that actually has nothing to do with whether or not Maryland should give these kids credit for this.
Right. Let me actually answer your question.
It's a useful tangent.
All right, look. I think it's great for students to go out there and to protest and to speak their mind. All right. This was on spring break here in Maryland, so that didn't present a problem. All right. But
I think you got to give a medal to kids who go and protest on their spring break.
Look, that's right. That's great. All right. But should they get credit? No, they shouldn't get credit. And you know what? If students leave school while school is in to go protest, they should face the consequences, because that's what civil disobedience is about. You should go speak your mind, but you also face the consequences that your actions bring.
I mean, I wonder if Thoreau ever was in a situation where somebody was, offering him an excused absence to go off to Walden. I mean, his mom did his laundry all those years, of course, on a weekly basis. But it does tend to kind of take the bite out of civil disobedience when somebody is telling you that this also counts for course credit.
That's right. Beans, Rick. Beans.
Thoreau. What about him?
Walden.
He liked beans?
He liked beans.
I don't even want to imagine what that
smelled
like.
So maybe that's what we have to give. Instead of credit, we should give beans. Okay. Time is up. And we are now ready for our favorite part of the show. Rick, you know what this is?
My favorite part.
Your show. This is called Education News of the Weird, and this is where we hear about strange things that are happening around the K-12 education system with our especially weird correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's happening?
Well, Mike, the Education News of the Weird this week comes to us from Abilene, Texas, where students at Bonham Elementary School faced a wee problem last week. All their bathrooms stopped working simultaneously.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Talking about elementary school students here. So, innovative thinking, the teachers brought in the buses, and they took these kids on some field trips to surrounding schools, which kindly opened their doors to the masses. So what do you think? What do you think, Rick? Underfunded schools here?
Well, I think there's two takeaways here. One is I think this is precisely the kind of field trip that Montgomery County would give kids credit for, particularly if they were to do a collage or an essay about the different bathrooms they encountered in the course of their afternoon travails. I think, I trust that you could probably get about a semester's worth of middle school from Montgomery County out of that day, which probably makes it educationally efficient to a high degree. The larger question, though, is I was just watching Oprah the other day with Jonathan Kozol, and Jonathan was showing us across the country that urban schools typically have lousier swimming pools than nicer suburban schools. In fact, many of these swimming pools are well nigh unusable. I say, if you can't use it to swim in, you can use it to pee in. We were losing class time unnecessarily. You can just cue these kids up. 30 or 40 boys could pee over the side at a time. My God, we could free up 14, 16 minutes of instruction a day. I don't understand why we're not thinking about effective classroom management techniques like this.
Well, it's those kinds of innovative ideas that our listeners tune in for, and I suspect that we're going to get all kinds of letters now from school districts around the country who want Rick Hess to be their superintendent with those kinds of solutions, Rick.
Well, or at least their time efficiency consultant.
That's right. That's right. Very good. Wow. Okay. Well, Rick, Liam, it was a pleasure having you here today. Also want to thank again Nina Chakrai-Reese for joining us. Check us out again on the web, www.edexcellence.net, to see the original Education Gadfly. And if you want to send us some feedback, send it to letters@edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Thank you.